Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony. Thank you for tuning in. This is episode 195. Now, for a handful of episodes, I was trying out the Road Report concept, where I was trying to make the most of a long drive to work and record episodes, simple stream of consciousness stuff. But now for episode 195, I've taken that concept and flipped it around a little bit. For this episode, fearless Fred Kennedy, well-known radio personality for Q107, host of the Issue Zero podcast, which is a great podcast. I highly suggest you check it out, as well as a comic book creator. Fred was able to join the cave this week via his car on his way home from work. So we flipped the concept a little bit, and I like it. This is a way better version of the Road Report, and I had a great time chatting with Fred. We discuss everything from working on radio to the Silver Surfer, Infinity Gauntlet to Conan. We talk just about everything. He's one of my favorite people to chat with at Comic Cons, and I'm really happy to have gotten a chance to record with him again for the podcast. It was real casual, and as you'll see, you'll be tuned into the very beginning of our conversation, full-on cold start. Now, editor's note, a couple days before me and Fred recorded our podcast, we had a bit of a scheduling snafu, and you'll hear us mention it a little bit at the beginning of our cold start, but I'm happy it worked out the way that it did. So without further ado, I hope everyone is doing well, safe and sound with their families, doing the best to cope with this time. And whatever platform you guys listen to the podcast, please remember to rate and review us and subscribe to us, because it helps get the podcast out there to other people. Once again, thank you to Fearless Fred Kennedy, and I hope everybody enjoys this episode. We will talk to you soon. Take care, everyone.
I'm good, dude. I'm good. Sorry about the other day on Wednesday.
No problem, bro. No problem. I completely understand.
To be honest, I was like, it was just a terrible day. I wouldn't have been a good interview that day.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah, it was just like a shitty day and like nothing but like conspiracy yahoos calling the station and, oh, I can't believe Trudeau did this, and blah, blah, blah. And like, dude, it's constant. It's just ridiculous.
How are you coping with all of this stuff, like, being in your position?
It's fine. Yeah. You know, the thing is that there was a great show on the CBC years ago called The Newsroom, and it was a show that was all about, it's referred to as newsroom comedy or gallows comedy, and it's super dark, like, you know how someone's like, oh, man, that's too soon. You shouldn't have made that joke.
Right.
It's never too soon in a newsroom. Ever.
So you're desensitized to a certain type of humor, I guess?
You are. You are. But it's not because you don't care. It's right. Because it's a coping mechanism because you're constantly in it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you can't escape it.
You're not desensitized so much as like you just don't want it to control everything about you.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, that's the beauty of comedy, right? Is that it breaks down all of this tension that we got up inside, all the things you can't say. You can let it out with the jokes and realize, you know what? Sometimes it doesn't have
Absolutely.
To always be serious. Like, we need this.
Yeah, that's totally the way it is.
Yeah. So, well, was today
a better... How are you dealing with things?
I'm okay. I'm considered essential. You actually thanked the plumbers on one of your podcasts. I'm a plumber, so I appreciated that.
Well, you are essential, man.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm in a condo, a residential condo construction. So when we were initially, my company shut down. So I was like, I appreciate that because construction sites are like a cesspool of just germs and all the time, right? So when you got to be careful about washing your hands after everything you touch nowadays, you're thinking work is the most dangerous place to be. But going back was a little nerve-wracking, but it's been okay. So I'm grateful. Can't complain.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you're safe and taking precautions.
Yeah. How about your family? How are your kids? I don't know what your wife does for work, but you said that her work is crazy. Everything good on the home front?
Yeah, she works with Canadian Blood Services, so it's pretty gonzo and
right.
Like they're very busy, but they're not servicing as many people because of all the physical distancing and all that stuff. But you got to have blood, so they still got to run. And there's a lot of people that don't feel they're getting enough personal protective equipment and all that stuff. So there's a lot of goings on at her work, and like people are calling and canceling, and then she's gets called into work, and so that's it. Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
Yeah. And your kids are okay, but they're having a good time, they're not dying of boredom.
I think it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. there's never been anything as amazing as this ever. Ziggy yesterday was like, he goes, it's sad that people might die, but I really like not going to school.
My wife has had the same experience, actually.
Yeah.
She's enjoyed the time away because she's had a job since she was 14 years old. So this is the first time that she's not been able to go to work and out of her control. And she's learning to like reset and have a moment to herself, which she's never had, which I'm really happy for her. So everyone's dealing with differently, right? It's interesting to see.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Well, a lot of people are dealing with it. Some people are having a rougher go, but
yeah, of course. You know, of course.
Our thoughts are with them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even us, the people who might be introverts, like for myself, who can handle being at home and be like, I don't have kids. It's just me and my wife. So we're okay. But I do understand the people who are out of work and are worried and have, like, I haven't seen my parents for a while because they're a little older. So all of these things are getting frustrating, but
yeah,
we still got things that we can enjoy. Right. I've appreciated those podcasts you've been doing about, you know, the quarantine and getting through everything, what we're taking in, the type of stuff you recommend. That stuff's important.
Oh yeah, man. We're going to do one with a guy, Brian Level. Don't know. He's an artist. He just done a bunch of stuff with Marvel and Image, and he's awesome. He's going to come on next week. I recorded the episode on Tuesday's release, and I read chapter one of Heir to the Empire. That's a good one too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I've been recording since I answered. I hope you don't mind.
That's fine. That's cool.
Okay, cool. Well, for those who are catching, I'm going to do the radio trick that you talk about. You got to catch people up to what's going on, right? This is Fred Kennedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the Cave of Solitude.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming on. You're a busy dude, and I the first thing I wanted to ask you was, how do you compartmentalize all these different things you do and keep things organized in your head? Because you got a podcast, you're on the radio every day, like real radio. And
yeah, real radio.
you're a dad, you're a husband, you're a comic creator. Like, how do you like manage all of this stuff, man? I admire that.
To be honest, it's really comes down to I can't sit still. You know, I miss the go train. Right now, my routine is kind of thrown into flux because all of my writing is done on the go train.
Right.
I write on the go train going in, and then I write on the go train going home. And without that right now, because of COVID, I'm having to drive. And I'm not, I feel that driving is wasted time. Like, a lot of times when you're driving, that's what you're doing. You're driving. When I'm on the go train, I'm writing. Like, and I've learned to treat my writing as like a coping mechanism for the stresses of work. And right. As a release, because when you work on like ancient radio, terrestrial radio, which is what I do, you're constantly trying to find content that fits a broad audience. And a lot of the things that I'm really, really into and passionate about are very niche, which are the things that I talk about on my podcast, Issue Zero.
Right.
And so when I'm doing my podcast writing, I'm scratching that itch of all the things that I love. And when I'm writing comics, I'm scratching that itch. And to be honest, it's like a coping mechanism that makes me more precise and direct when I'm on the radio for my day job. And I'm serious when I say this. Going to the gym is a huge component of that. When I go to the gym, I find it much easier for me to focus on everything. So my daily routine is I get up, I make breakfast for the kids, we hang out, I take them to school, then I go to the gym, then I take the train to work, I do my show, or record podcasts, do anything, but I do my show from like 2 to 7, and then I get on the train, I go home, and I write the whole way home, I get home, hang out with the kids, make sure their homework is done, put them to bed, and then my wife and I will hang out, and we'll watch TV, or watch a movie, and she has a glass of wine, and I always have two fingers of whiskey, my nightcap. And sometimes we're watching TV, like sometimes we'll watch a lot of shows that she wants to watch. And when that's happening, I will write at the same time, like kind of like write and watch the show at the same time.
Yep.
So yeah, that's it. Like that's my day to day. And I don't do much writing at all on weekends. On weekends, I'm very present with the family.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I enjoyed taking the train myself to work. A lot of people don't understand that, but that was my time to be able to read. I still read a lot, but I started a new job or with a new company where I'm driving a half hour, 40 minutes away. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with that long drive because it drives me crazy. So I started to podcast while I was in the car, like doing just stream of consciousness, whatever I was reading, kind of a book review, right? To keep the content going. And it's difficult and it's dangerous, so I don't do it very much. But yeah, using that time, that commute time, I love being able to sit on a train and use it to my advantage and still get to where I got to go to. So I totally get that.
Yeah, I wrote all of my first like comics on the GO train, and I still write stuff now on the GO train all the time. It's just therapeutic, you know. You get on that GO train, and I'm a big supporter of the quiet zone, and I put on my headphones and then I write and I listen to music, and I generally speaking listen to like video game soundtracks when I'm writing. And I do that because I can't write if there's lyrics in the music.
Yep.
Because then I just start writing what the lyrics are saying.
Yeah.
I will put on like these soundtracks of video games, and then I'll just zone out, and I'll play a video game soundtrack that correlates with the genre that I'm writing. Like, I was tinkering with a Western for a bit with one of my buddies, and when I was writing it, I was playing the Red Dead Redemption 2 soundtrack, and or the soundtracks from the Ennio Morricone soundtracks from all the Sergio Leone movies. Sorry, I'm getting all the names mixed up there. But I'd play that stuff, too, you know? Or if I'm writing sci-fi, I'll listen to, like, the Mass Effect soundtrack or something like that.
Right. It's funny, when you talk about stuff on the podcast, And you, the way you engage with things, I relate to it, because when I read, sometimes I like to have a couple things going on as well. But when I read, I'll put like ambient music in the background to go with the subject of the book. So like I've been reading a lot of Silver Surfer lately, and so I'll put like ambient cosmic music in the background, and it's like the book suddenly becomes so much better. So for you to say that you're doing that, it's hilarious. Even the fact that the way you said that you collect trades, you like to read things in trade format instead of single issue. I'm the same thing. I like to, and then I get sucked down that rabbit hole of wanting to get everything from a specific writer or artist, whatever it might be.
Totally.
So I totally get that.
That's how I cracked out on the 100 Bullets series, which I came into right when it was ending. But I think I must have read like 70 issues of that series in a 2-week period. I just couldn't stop reading it. It was so good. That's my all-time favorite comic is 100 Bullets, like, period.
Yeah. What was that Western that you were working on? Can you give us a hint of stuff that you got going on right now?
I'm working on some... Okay, this is what's frustrating is that... And I feel like I'm not trying to whine. I'm just saying what's happening is I had three particular projects that were all ironed in the fire, green lit, moving ahead, all the landing gear down, all that. And then ever since COVID happened, they were kind of kerblooied, you know? Right. And it's sorry, man, we got to cut that. We got to cut that. And I'm in the same boat as a lot of people.
Right.
And I'm fortunate that I have a day job. It's just, it is unfortunate. And that particular project that was a Western, but it was a little bit different than a regular Western. It kind of got thrown by the wayside, but the artist and I are currently working with a publisher in France to see if we can get it published there. I can't really say much about it because I'm not the only creator involved in it. I don't really want to tip hands and whatnot, but I will say that doing prep for it, I played some Crusader Kings 2, the video game.
Yeah.
And I was also watching Western after Western after Western. So that's the best way to break it all down.
I don't know how you keep all of the information of content that you like. You're super into Star Wars, you're super into Conan, and you're able to maintain all that information so well. Like I guys like you and Sam Noir, I don't know how you guys do it. It's like a
notes, encyclopedia. Man. You just take notes.
You take notes while you watch Westerns? Notes.
Depends. Like, if I'm reading for pleasure, no.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If I'm reading for a purpose, like, yeah, absolutely, I'll take notes. Like, when I did a podcast episode all about Conan, and I went back over and reread a whole bunch of Conan books, just because, you know, I hadn't read them in a long time. I reread Black Colossus, The Hour of the Dragon, and then I started going back through the Dark Horse reboot, and there was a... I remember specifically, the concept was that Conan was born on the battlefield. Like, his mother went into battle pregnant, and then she gave birth to him. And when he suckled at her breast, there was the blood of his enemies on his mom's teat, as it were. And the first taste that entered his mouth wasn't his mother's milk, but the blood of his enemies. And to me, I was like, wow, that's awesome. But I couldn't figure out if that was in a Robert E. Howard story or whether Kurt Busiek had made it up. So I just messaged him and was like, dude, did you make this up or was that from Howard? He goes, I don't know where I read it, but I know it's a Howardism. And I went, all right, it's good enough for me. That was that. Generally speaking, like, I'm the same as anybody. I read and then it flops into my head. But if I'm reading for a purpose, right, then generally speaking, my memory is a whole lot better on it.
That makes sense. So when I do my podcasts in the car, I call it the road report. So it's fitting that you're in your car and we're podcasting as you're going home from work. So I want to do a this or that with you to go over some of the things that I know that you love, but I want to get your take on them. Okay? So
shoot.
I know that you love the Infinity Gauntlet. I just finished rereading it again. I think it's a great story. A lot of people think it's hammy or whatnot, but I think Starlin's a genius.
It's a story of its time, I'll say that. But I've got a romantic love connection to it. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes when you read it with a different frame of mind, like if you take, okay, it's a big event comic, I get it, from the 90s, bombastic, which is part of its charm, but... the stuff he gets into sometimes, there's another layer to it. And that I think that's what's crazy about Starlin. That's why I love him. But if Infinity Gauntlet were an album, what album would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say it is Dream Theater, A Change of Seasons. Dream Theater is like a big-time prog rock band. And Change of Seasons is an album that doesn't really have songs. It has like... well, it has like 7 songs, but each song is really just a medley, and each one is like 10, 15 minutes long. So I would say it's Dream Theater's A Change of Seasons because there's dark undertones, but there is some schlockiness, but that doesn't take away from any of it. Like, it's incredibly well done. Like, to do that is very difficult, but it's not for everybody. Like, if you like Tool, and then you threw on a Dream Theater album, I wouldn't be surprised if you were like, it's kind of cheesy. It is kind of cheesy, but it's really good, you know?
Right.
So I would say, yeah, it's Dream Theater, A Change of Seasons.
I can't believe how quick you came up with an answer for that. That's awesome. I thought you'd be chewing over it.
I tried.
That was good. All right, so I think I know the answer to it, but Infinity Gauntlet or Crisis on Infinite Earths?
I would say Infinity Gauntlet, but that doesn't mean that Crisis on Infinity Earth isn't good. I think it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But the characters that are affected in that story aren't my characters, you know?
Right.
They're not the characters that I really love. Like, I'm of that era where 90s Marvel was what I loved. And when we moved to Canada, like, that was Infinity Gauntlet. I found it on the spinner rack, and that was it for me. So I would have to pick that. But I read Infinite Earths when I was a lot older. Mm-hmm. And my problem with DC is that it felt like there was no entry point for a long time, where every story you read involved a million characters you didn't know and you needed to know them to understand the importance of what was going on.
Right.
And Infinity Gauntlet has a clear start where you don't necessarily need to know everybody because they're all sort of introduced as they go with that classic, like, oh, and the God of Thunder, son of Odin. And it's like, just two little lines like that. Oh, that's who that is. Okay, I get it. Like, that's all you need to do. And I felt that Crisis didn't do that. Or maybe I should go back and reread it. I haven't read it in like 10 years.
No, I don't disagree with you because I was a lifelong DC fan. And I got into Marvel later in my comic book collecting life. And I found that getting into Marvel was a lot more... You get quickly invested in the characters so much faster. And...
like...
yeah.
A perfect example, another DC example, is like if you go to a comic shop and you're like, give me a really good Batman story. Okay, cool. I'll give you The Long Halloween. The Long Halloween has like 30 characters in it. And as you're reading it, you're like, who's this? Who's this? Who's this? Who's this? Okay, all right. This one's not so good. We'll give you this one. How about Hush? Hush. Again, you're dealing with like another 30 or 40 characters.
Yeah.
It's like, just stick with something. And that's not me bad-mouthing DC at all. Because I will always say that, like, Kingdom Come is, like, a masterstroke of comic book creation. But it also has, like, a million characters. It just does it better, you know?
Right. Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
No, no.
I pissed someone off saying that. I know I did.
All right. I know you're a big cosmic fan as well as, you know, you're into the Barbarians as well, but you've got a Green Lantern ring on your finger, but you're also a big Silver Surfer fan. So who would you take over if you had to choose one to write? Green Lantern?
Oh, Surfer.
Surfer?
Not even close. Silver Surfer.
Okay.
Like, I've got like 8 stories kicking around in my head right now. You tell me, if you said, Brad, go write a Silver Surfer comic, we're going to publish it next week, I'd have you scripts on your desk on Sunday morning. But, like, the thing with my... I have a wedding ring that is a Green Lantern ring. The thing about that ring is I like Green Lantern, and when I got married, it was when the Geoff Johns Green Lantern Rebirth was going on.
Yeah.
And Green Lantern was like the comic at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was in a big Green Lantern phase. Yeah. And when my wife and I were getting rings, I wasn't going to get a wedding ring. Like, I don't wear jewelry. It's not my thing. Some people, and that's not me saying, dude, shouldn't wear jewelry, bro. I just don't. And
right.
So, when my wife was like, well, you're going to get a ring. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not. And then she was like, well, what kind of ring would you get? And in passing, I said, well, I'd wear a Green Lantern ring, not expecting her to agree. And 11 years later, here we are.
That's
driving
hilarious.
My car wearing a Green Lantern ring.
You know, I got married around the same time, and I asked if I could get a Green Lantern wedding ring. It didn't go so well for me, but I'm happy it did for one of us.
Yeah, well, I try.
What is it about the Surfer for you that you love so much? I'm always interested to find out why people like that character. Because the people who do really like him.
Because I'm a bullshit philosopher. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I think what it is when I got really into comics, I was new to Edmonton and to Canada. Like, I am Canadian, but I hadn't lived in Edmonton ever. And I didn't have many friends, and I was very socially awkward because I make terrible impressions on people because I try too hard to be nice, and I think I come across as an asshole and disingenuous because of that. And I also think I'm smarter than I am. And so the thing with the Silver Surfer is he's like the perfect superhero for that morose, lonely kid that thinks the reason they're not cool or not popular is because people are intimidated by their intelligence when it's not that at all.
Right.
And so the Silver Surfer is like, he's this guy with all this power but has done so many shitty things, and he's constantly trying desperately to redeem himself and be loved and get forgiveness and absolution, and there's like a yearning in him all the time. And when I was like 13 or 14, I felt like that too. I just wanted people to be nice to me and to like me. And I felt like the Silver Surfer is like that. Right. But then I also have these moments where I'm like, screw these people. And then it's like, that's when you love Conan, because Conan doesn't care.
Right.
Conan
right.
don't fight anybody. It's like, he doesn't need you to like him. He's strong and dignified. Whereas I think the Surfer is very desperate and needy. And I love that, you know? And it's like, I don't know. I love the Silver Surfer because of the types of stories that you can tell with a character like that. You know, it's just, he's perfect sci-fi. He's like the perfect sci-fi foil. He's great. I love him so much.
Yeah, no, I discovered him a little later, and actually not too long ago with the Dan Slott series, and I absolutely loved it. And the philosophy, yeah. The philosophy of the Surfer, with, like you said, all of that power that he has, and the fact that he could traverse the universe to its ends, but then there's always that contemplative time that is taken out with those stories that, I don't know, I'm similar to you. I have that philosophizing spirit in me where I think about things a lot. And
yeah.
There's that relatability to the character where he's seeing so much and just trying to get an understanding of it. And it's almost like so much information he's trying to process, but it really comes down to the simplicities of things.
Did you ever read Requiem by J. Michael Straczynski and Assad Rubik?
Not yet.
I like the Silver Surfer. To be honest, my Silver Surfer love started with the Nintendo game, which had amazing music but was ridiculously hard. My friend Matthew had it, and I liked playing it. I thought it was cool. But by the comic, I like the Silver Surfer. I just love the way that Ron Lim drew him specifically.
Yeah.
It just looked really cool.
Yeah.
And I always feel like Ron Lim's characters are all just the Silver Surfer with accessories on them, the way he draws them. Like, when you look at them,
yeah.
It's like, that's the Silver Surfer just with hair and Quasar's quantum bands. Like, that's what it is. And that's cool. I love Ron Lim. He's like my favorite Marvel artist of that era. But Requiem, when I read it, I was older. Like, not super old, but I was older when I read it.
Yeah.
And it hit all these notes for me that I felt that I'd never really articulated or seen articulated in a comic. And that's not me saying they'd never been done. I had just never read anything like it
before. Right.
And when he's like talking about, like, if you were on Earth for so long and you had all this power, you could have like killed all these dictators and these like villainous people. And he's got this line where he's like, yeah, but then others would have just taken their place. And I remember when that line happened, I was like, yes, yes. I so agreed with it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this cycle of horse shit that goes on all the time. And people are like, why doesn't Superman just solve it? Because then there'd be somebody else, you know?
Right.
You've got to break the circle instead of letting it keep rolling, you know? The wheel that they talked about in Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's like that. Yeah, so that's my very long-winded answer.
No, I wanted the long-winded answer. I like that. What helped you get over that moment in your life as a kid where you were feeling that awkwardness or that, you know, not being able to fit in, but you say you're trying hard to appease people or to make people like you. How did you outgrow that? Do you ever feel that you did?
I don't know if I ever did, to be honest. My father will tell me that the reason I do what I do now to show all the people that said I couldn't do it before. And I don't know. I don't think that you ever really like move. I don't want to say that. Like, some people do. I just honestly don't know if I ever did. I mean, you could make a strong case based on the way I act and what I do that I'm still kind of that same guy looking for approval, because I work on the radio and my salary is dictated by my ratings, and my ratings are dictated by how many people are listening, and they'll only listen if they like what you're talking about. So you could argue that I never got over it, and maybe that all the garbage that I dealt with in junior high specifically, and even in high school, mostly junior high though, but that that all of the things that I do and the way I organize my life is a reflection of those experiences that I had growing up, like those formative years. And also the thing, like, when I moved to Toronto from out west, it was a very, very difficult transition. And I was not well-liked on the radio at all at first.
In Toronto or in Edmonton? Because I was different
than what had been there. And it was a difficult time. And I kind of leaned back on the experiences that I'd had dealing with all those people in junior high, because the people that I was dealing with that were calling the station and emailing all the time were no different than the 12 and 13-year-olds that I dealt with for years in puberty, you know?
Yeah. How do you deal with that now that it's your profession? Like, I don't see you in that way at all. Like, my first engagement with you was at Comic-Cons and in the sketch duels and how you addressed the crowd and dealt with the artists. Like, I thought you were very gregarious, very friendly. So I don't see that aspect of your life. But how do you deal with the people that are sending all of that negativity your way as an adult now?
You know, there's all those people. I just ignore it.
Yeah, no, that's...
No, you don't. You don't ignore it.
Right,
it's,
right.
I acknowledge it, but I don't let it dictate things. Because, generally speaking, and I say generally because this doesn't apply to everything, but a lot of times if somebody's dumping on you, they're not dumping on you.
Yeah.
They're venting at you over something else. So everyone's got their insecurities, and you just gotta just not take it personally. I don't know. That sounds like a bullshit answer, because I think in the comic world in particular, there's a lot of marginalized creators that deal with a lot of horse shit from asshats. And I don't want to say, oh, they're victims too, but there's a certain level that I wonder, like, what is so shitty about your life that is making you have to dump this out? You know, like, why are you doing this? Like, what happened? What happened to you?
Right.
I'm lucky too. Like, I had like parents who really loved me. Like, they're strict. They're very strict, but there was always like that like affection, you know? So I knew I was loved. So it made it a lot easier in the long run. I see that now. I didn't at the time, but I realize that now, that just having like a positive place to go was great. And that's true privilege right there, is having a home. And I had that, and I was very fortunate to.
Yeah, that's definitely true privilege. It's something, I think you appreciate the love that your parents have for you when you are an adult. You look back and be like, oh, they did that because they loved me. Now I get it.
Yeah, once you've got your own kids, you see, like, you see that line you got to walk. Like, your kid has a rough day at school, or they got picked on by somebody. And then you dig into the story. They got picked on because they couldn't keep their mouth shut. And they started something, but what they got was a lot worse. And it's like, you know, if you just kept your mouth shut. But that doesn't take away the fact that they feel like shit too. And you got to learn, like, it's you got to bounce back and forth. And it's like, you start to, like, all those cliches, like, about parenting really are real for a reason, you know?
Yeah,
they
all
start to, like, come back and hit you in the face.
Yeah, that it revolves, right? That revolution occurs for you. You see it come back to you, that cycle. Yeah, well, I think your mindfulness is admirable, the fact that you're able to look back at what happened, but you don't have resentment towards people because you were mistreated. Some people do that. And I think,
you know, actually, one of my best friends now is a guy who was merciless to me when I was in junior high. And he's hilarious. Like one of my best friends in the world now.
How did that transition happen?
I didn't realize he liked comics. We went to the same comic shop in Edmonton, Warp 2, on 97th Street.
The ultimate equalizer.
Like, and I hated all the comics that he liked too. And then when we got older, it was actually him that recommended Supreme Powers to me. And to this day, I always say, like, if you're ever going to do like a parody of the Justice League, Supreme Powers is like, oh my God, it's so good.
That's
that
cool.
Supreme Powers arc that Marvel Max did back in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, J. Michael Straczynski and Gary Frank. And there's actually Kieran Grant. He's an artist from the States. He did all these pieces of, Night Owl or Nighthawk or whatever, something like that. The guy that hates white people.
Great.
He did all this amazing, these amazing prints of the guy. And I remember I saw him at ECC a few years ago, and I was like, where are those prints? And he was all sold out, man. They sold out on the first day. And I've never been a, like, got to get that print guy. But I was very upset that I couldn't get those prints.
Right. Are you home now? I just wanted to double check with you.
Just about home. Okay. I can give you like 5 minutes before I get yelled at.
Okay, cool. So just before you got to go, I got a couple more fun questions to ask you. Since you're a big Surfer fan, Ron Lim or John Buscema on the Surfer?
You know, this isn't a who's better. This is a who do you prefer.
Right.
And I'm going to go with, you know, if this was like, I would rather see Buscema draw Conan.
Yeah.
But I would rather see Ron Lim draw the Surfer just because that's the Surfer that I loved, you know?
Yeah.
That's the Surfer that made me a Surfer fan right there. I actually have a Ron Lim commission of the Surfer that hangs in my office.
That's sweet. That's all. And that's why I thought the question was good, because Buscema's the Conan guy and Lim is, they're both known for Surfer. So it was putting you in a tough spot. Yeah. So
I could, you know what? I don't think Ron Lim would draw a really good Conan.
No, probably not.
Well, he probably could. He's very talented.
But sure, but
I just don't think it would look right, you know?
Yeah, totally. You're a Star Wars buff, and you're a Conan guy. If you had to choose one, which one would it be?
Star Wars. I would pick Star Wars, just because Star Wars has given me so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars was there before Conan, so.
Right. What do you think it is about Star Wars that appeals to so many people? Because, like, I love Star Wars myself. I haven't read a lot of the novels. But there's, like, it seems to me there's so many different ways to interact with it. Like, I'm big into the movies and to the comic books right now. But then someone like yourself, you're into the Clone Wars. You could be into the video game sector. Is that what you think it is, just the wide range of media that people can get from it?
Like, that's the thing that I get irritated with the Star Wars fan base, is that they think all of it needs to be for them.
Right.
And I don't like that way of thinking, because Star Wars can be for everybody. Like, there's different ways of doing Star Wars. Like, there's different types of stories you can tell. And there's nothing wrong with having, like, a female-centric Star Wars story, or like a gay-centric Star Wars story, because you're dealing with an entire galaxy.
Right.
So there's so much out there you can do. And at the same time, I don't think there's anything wrong with having like a bro-down Star Wars story either, provided it's not like some emotionally abusive piece of pap. And I say that because a lot of bro-down stories tend to wind up being that way. But you could do like The Mandalorian is what I would consider to be like a bro-down Star Wars story. And that's great, man. Like, it can work. It's fine, you know?
Yeah, totally. Thanos or Vader?
I love Vader more, but Thanos is my favorite Marvel villain, like, hands down. And I say that, and I would have said that before the movies and before everything became so popular and stuff, too. I feel like that's almost a cliche answer to have right now, and I realize as I say this, I sound like a comics hipster. I liked it before it was cool. But, dude, I had a Thanos tattoo on my leg in 2008. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you proved it. You earned your stripes. Okay, last question for you, since you're home now. If your sons were going to follow into dad's footsteps, would you rather them be successful comic book writers or podcasters?
You know, as long as they're happy,
yeah.
That's really all I care about. But to be honest, I didn't want to – I love writing and I love telling stories, but
yeah. –
I wanted to be a paleocultural anthropologist, man.
That's what you wanted to be, right?
I did. And when I was around 15 years old,
that's
and you get to take options and stuff in high school.
Yeah.
I picked anthropology. I don't even remember picking it. I picked it as like a second or third rate course. And what ended up happening is I couldn't get this option, couldn't get this one. I wound up in anthropology just by circumstance. And I loved it so much, especially like the evolution of humanity stuff. That was like the coolest stuff going. And so I would love to learn about the origins of human culture, because I really think that humanity evolved in primarily one or two areas, and that those inceptions of early culture are like so fascinating. There's an anthropologist, I forget what her name is, but she was talking about how the true definition of culture is when you find bodies with healed bones, in particular the femur. Because if you find a body with a healed femur, that means that they were cared for and fed and looked after. Because if your femur is broken, you can't do anything.
Right.
People have to look after you. And so the only way that you'd survive is if somebody was getting things for you to survive. And so, like, that era, like, when did that happen? Why did that happen? Why did we start burying our dead? Why did we bury our dead and then put things in the graves with them? When did that happen? You know?
Right, right.
Like, these are the things that I want to learn about. I've often had, like, dreams of doing a comic about that, like, that dawn of fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm getting the name right, Nick Christakis, I think he wrote a book about that, about culture, exactly what you're describing. I'll send you the link of some of the podcasts that he's been on. I think you'd find it really interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, this is intriguing to me. I'd love to talk to you more about it, but I know you're home. You've had a long day, long week. I really thank you for giving me your time, dude. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Oh, good, buddy. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I want you to have a great weekend and stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy the weather, enjoy the family, and everyone stay healthy, man.
All right, brother. Have a good one.
You too, man. Take care.